Professor Tim Versalotti, director of the Western New England University Poll, a man I like to call a friend and one of the brightest people on the face of the earth. Thank you for being with us, Tim.
Thank you very much, Alan. The check is in the mail.
Tim, I guess I wanted to ask you about the debates. You're a pollster. You're keeping an eye on it. In previous talks that you and I have had, you talk about the importance of the bandwagon effect. Somebody wins one time and he gets good reviews, and then some people come from the other place and they want to be with a winner. So how important are these debates?
In this cycle, these debates have become very important. It's really striking. Looking at the viewership numbers, in particular for the debate, the Republican debate on Fox in August, and then the Democratic debate that occurred a few weeks ago, the numbers were really, really high for this point in the election cycle. There is a tremendous amount of interest in both parties in watching these debates. And they can shuffle the deck. What we saw in terms of the Republicans, we saw at least after the first Republican debate, Donald Trump cementing his front-runner status. We saw Jeb Bush beginning to fade. After the Democratic debate, we saw Hillary Clinton open up an even more significant lead over Bernie Sanders. So these debates can really shuffle the deck. And I think another indicator of the significance of the debates was this unprecedented gathering of the Republican presidential campaigns after the most recent Republican debate on CNBC, this gathering that occurred where campaign operatives talked about demands they would make and future debates. It's clear that the candidates are also keenly aware that these debates play a very important role at this point in the cycle.
Now, what about the kerfuffle? They're on CNBC and they unify as one, they say, you know, we don't like the questions you're asking, and we want to call the rules. And Trump says to the rest of them, well, I don't agree with you on everything, and I want to just negotiate separately because I'm the big name in these debates. That's a parenthesis. I'm not sure he actually said those words, but yeah. And yet, the image to the American people is, hey, wait a second now. Is it really CNBC? Is it really you guys are, you know, not doing well?
Yeah, this has been a great illustration of what we teach our political science students, the collective action problem.
Or I may just say, as a former professor, we try to teach our political science.
We try, yeah. We find out at exam time. But what this showed, what was fascinating was seeing all the campaigns, competitors getting together and then drafting a list of demands in terms of questions, in terms of opening and closing statements, even talking about the temperature in the room. Remember the Republican debate, the first Republican debate at the Reagan Library, the heat was up very high, and people were sweating. And of course, you just have to go back to that Nixon-Kennedy debate in 1960 to point out that perspiration does not help a candidate. But then after the campaigns got together and the Trump campaign said they weren't interested, that they would do their own negotiating, things began to fall apart and campaigns began to step back. And there was a little bit of pushback as well. We saw some significant voices in the Republican Party say, look, we understand your complaints, but you're going to overplay your hand. It's time to back off. Senator John McCain came out and said, man up answer the questions. These are not pleasant experiences, but they're part of the ritual of being tested by fire as you run for president. So we have seen some stepping back, and it's unclear where this is going next in terms of the debate schedule. RNC, after the CNBC debate, canceled a debate or at minimum postponed a debate that would have been sponsored by NBC and Telemundo, which is owned by the parent company of NBC. And that was a risky decision.
It's stupid. I'm sorry for cutting in, but I think it's a stupid decision. They have a huge problem with Hispanic voters. It's getting worse. There are more and more Hispanic voters. What could they be thinking?
That's right. It is a rapidly growing segment of the electorate with the harsh immigration rhetoric that has occurred in the Republican primary campaign. Hispanics are already feeling alienated from the party. And so to suspend the one debate that would have been on a Spanish language network was really risky for the party. And Jeb Bush, alone among the candidates, has argued that they need to restore at least the debate on Telemundo. Bush, being fluent in Spanish, is keenly aware of the role that Hispanic voters will play next year.
Let me talk to you about that for a moment. Does putting up a black candidate, Carson, or a Hispanic candidate, Rubio, does that help, assuage the people who are angry about the way in which a party is going?
I'm not sure it does. The conventional wisdom among pundits about Ben Carson's candidacy is that it somehow insulates the Republican Party against criticism that it is racist. And this is a criticism that progressives and strong supporters of President Obama have lodged over the years. I think the average voter is probably a little more savvy than that in terms of race and ethnicity. And so I don't think that the symbolism of these candidacies is as powerful as one would expect. And I would extend that as well to the candidacies of Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz. Should either become the party nominee, yes, they would break a barrier. They would be the first candidate of Hispanic descent to head up a major party ticket. But I think the majority of voters will make their judgments based beyond simple characteristics like demographics when they're making their choices.
Let me just say to you that it's still very early. A lot of people are calling on compulsory Great Britain-type limits on how long our campaigns go on, or as the old saying goes, that ain't going to happen. But should it?
It's very tempting, isn't it? You're absolutely right about the experience in the UK. Although even there, their campaigns have begun to take on a few more American trappings. It is the nature of our political culture, but more importantly, the nature of our political media, that we are in an endless campaign cycle now. And there's simply no getting around that. Even in polling, we see not just polls of the 2016 cycle, we'll see polls of the 2018 midterms as well. People just can't get enough of this, or a certain segment of the audience can't get enough, and so those tastes get catered to.
A real fast Bernie question. We only have a minute. Bernie seems to be trailing seriously after Hillary Clinton. Hillary seems to have grabbed many of Bernie's signature programs, or seems to have. Is it over for Bernie?
It's hard to say. I think if you were wanting to be one of the candidates in that race, you'd rather be Clinton than Sanders, no question. You do hear talk, though, that his candidacy is as much about shaping the debate as it is about winning the nomination.
Well, I know the guy. I know the guy pretty well, and I think he wanted to be the candidate.
Indeed.
I don't think he came in it to shape the debate.
No, and his fundraising has been terrific. He's kept, in the latest quarter, he kept pace with Hillary Clinton, so he's got resources to stay in the race. But again, that first debate was not his friend either, and in terms of appearing presidential, in terms of expanding, demonstrating his breadth of policy knowledge beyond his bread-and-butter economic issues. It was tough. He struggled with foreign policy. He ran into some trouble on gun control and gun rights. It's hard to see him rebounding from that, but again, it's early days.
Yeah, well, one of his managers must have told him to smile, because I see him smiling a lot more these days. That kind of thing could be important. Hey, Tim Versalotti, the director of the Western New England University Poll, the extraordinary professor of political science, thanks so much for being with us.
You're welcome.